We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Yep, it's the world's most dangerous morning show, The Breakfast Club. Charlamagne Tha God, Jess Hilarious. I don't know where the hell Envy is at. But we got a special guest, man. He's got a new show coming out on Netflix called The Vince Staples Show. Vince Staples is here!
How you doing?
I'm going good. How y'all doing?
That's what's up.
What's up, my guy?
Good.
I'm chilling, man.
You look healthy, man.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I'm trying to stay that way, bro. I'm getting old, so, you know.
You went vegan or something?
Oh, no.
He sounded like you used to look bad or something.
No.
It was a little different. It was a little different. A little grimier, I guess, would be the term.
How are you, though?
I'm good, bro. I'm grateful. I'm blessed. All the good shit. So I'm good.
You know you're not. You're tired as hell. It's early in the morning.
I'm always tired, though. I be up early, though, so it's really not that crazy just to run around, you know, the press circuit type situation.
Right. So what is the Vince Staples Show about, man?
I mean, pretty much it's, you know, day-to-day life and our human experience. I feel like a lot of the times it's a lot of nuance in a lot of people's lives that we might kind of ignore. You know, we all had those days where we tell people, you know, you wouldn't believe the shit that happened to me today. So trying to find ways to utilize that and that format, so to say, and kind of attack deeper issues as far as, you know, classism, socialism, violence, our relationships with those things, our relationships with fame, money, things of that nature, and kind of taking a lighter approach to kind of the stuff that we deal with day to day that people wouldn't believe, because especially when you escape the Black community, right, you can tell people the stuff that you see that you might deem as normal. And when you get in these other rooms, they don't see it as normal necessarily. Yeah. So just trying to find a way to shed light on it while keeping it lighthearted.
Yeah, I asked that question because we were watching it, and that's what Jess said. Yeah. She said, what is this show about?
Yeah, nothing.
I was saying, like, what, because, you know, it's not like your typical show. You get what I'm saying? It's like you said, day to day. And which can, one day, it could be crazy, and then the next day, it can be just chill. Like, the first episode, what, like, stood out to me, I didn't expect for homie to die.
Yeah.
And then I know I'm kind of.
Oh, that was the second one.
The second one. Okay,
yeah,
I'm kind of telling. But like,
it's all good.
That was like, I go from laughing to I'm like, damn, that's just how that shit gonna be.
Yeah, but that's life. Like, you got to think about. Yeah. So that episode specifically, since we talking about that, right? You know, we've all had different levels of financial gain, and when you have these levels of financial gain, you get in these other rooms where you realize you don't really got what you think that you have, and a lot of the times. us kind of having the door closed in our face. You know, black people are entertainers, just people that come from a different world. We find solace in the things that we understand no matter where they come from. So, you know, your friend's robbing a bank, which is a negative situation, but you feel comfortable to be in that environment. Yeah. That could be alcoholism, that can be drugs, that can be streets, that can be violence, anything that we can kind of connect to when another door is closed. So that kind of represents the bigger statement of that. And also, niggas just die sometimes.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might be this close to an opportunity. You might be this close to a situation, which would be kind of receiving that loan and starting that business. And then something traumatic happens. And the response to it is how our response is when anybody get killed by the police. You know, you put your hands up and you stand still. So it's a lot of deeper meaning in a lot of the things. We just wanted to show nuance with it.
Even before that, though, because I don't want to give too much away, which I normally do when I watch something.
Yes.
But when you had the opportunity to leave, you realize even though you was innocent and didn't do nothing, stepping outside that door with the police might have led to you getting killed.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And it's like a lot of the stuff that brings us trauma and a lot of the stuff that kind of forces uncomfortable conversations for us, other people honestly don't even know about.
That's right.
I done had my manager for a long time, and I would just tell him certain stuff. Like, I remember we had a call. And I was like, oh, yeah, man, like, hold on, I got to go. Like, the baby shower got raided. And he was like, what? And he called me back. He was like, what you mean? I was at the homie's son baby shower and it got raided. Like, they kicked the door in. And he was like, they not supposed to do shit like that. Or, like, we got a meeting. And, all right, man, you got to bail me out real quick. Like, I didn't really look at it like it was that crazy until I got older. And you realize your circumstances are within a bubble. So I really kind of wanted to think about the thought process of that bubble and how when you in it, you don't notice what's going on until you leave. So you got subtle nuance in every episode where it's situations that we deal with, specifically in the black community, specifically kind of an urban background. But when you escape that shit makes zero sense, bro. And now that we kind of further removed and we're able to put it on screen, it does feel awkward. It feels uncomfortable a little bit because we don't expect to see these things in these environments.
Minister Farrakhan said, just because something is the norm doesn't mean it's normal.
Nah, exactly.
And I think a lot of our stuff is our norm, but it ain't normal.
Yeah, and I took a lot of approach from, you know, Coen Brothers type films, David Lynch, things that, like, that the Alfred Hitchcock, things that are meant to make you feel uncomfortable. And I was trying to use it within the guise of comedy, but that was the main, I guess, image of what I was trying to convey was contrast within a composition, because as black people we have contrast. You know, we have to be all these different things at once. Our relationship with money, family, fame, misfortune, all that shit is like, it's not really prevalent in other people's communities. So
yeah.
I wanted to make sure I got a chance to kind of show a little bit of that on camera.
What I love about the second episode too is you show how most brothers in the hood, even though they may choose a life of crime, they really are intelligent.
No, for
and,
sure.
And they're just doing things to survive. And if it wasn't just for a couple of different circumstances or opportunities between you and them, you could have been them or they could have been you.
Exactly. And I think that's understated. Like, also the relationship with fame within that episode is important because you have, you know, whatever level of success you have, especially working in music, you understand the fickle nature of the business and how it's not necessarily what it may seem, but to the world around you, you got everything. You got every opportunity. You got an unlimited amount of resources. You have everything. And that pride that they carry don't really translate into the rest of the world, because, you know, you can go in certain areas where Charlamagne and where Jess might be, you know, the biggest thing that we got in our communities. But once you step out and you try to kind of trailblaze and pave a way, they don't give a fuck who we are. And dealing with that is like, it's more common in the people that covet us would think.
Yeah. Look, you know, I'm a comedian. So the funniest part to me was homie in jail singing, right? Yo, that is so funny. I wanted to know, though, did you write that or did you let him his thing?
Yeah, I wrote it. But
so you wrote that. Crazy. That is hilarious.
His timing is amazing. Yes. Like, his context to kind of know where the joke is amazing. And as you know, in comedy, like, with film, and I feel like within stand-up specifically, it's so much more freedom. Yeah. It's so much more, I guess, execution is a lot more important because it ain't no editing, ain't no cutting, and you got to...
Nah, it ain't right there in your face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So within, I think, film and television, a lot of people might not know where the joke is at, and it's harder to tell the story or convey kind of the emotion you're trying to convey versus being in a stand-up. So it was hard at certain moments to try to figure out how to edit this correctly, how to make sure that it didn't fall flat, but also how to make sure it didn't look like you was kind of cooning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was perfect. It was funny. Thank you. He had a song for everything.
And I'm glad dude just wanted to square up. And not fuck you. Because nowadays you got to have a little bit of that. It seems like in every program.
Right.
I'm glad. It ain't going to piss Boosie off.
Yeah, man. Boosie can watch this, man, with the whole family. It's going to be good.
All the kids can watch.
So Boosie, watch this with the kids, man. It's not, you know what I mean?
If you was locked up, would you really act like that with other inmates?
Bro, so that episode, who we had a meeting with? We had a meeting.
About that episode?
No, we had a meeting I had a mishap, traffic ticket. So I had a traffic ticket.
And ended up in jail.
Yeah, and it was this dude. It was an important meeting, so I can't remember who it was, but it was somebody important. Mm-hmm. And the dude next to me, he just kept singing, bro. He wouldn't stop. And, you know, you're in the tank, so I'm like, all right, whatever. I feel like you should get a two-man sale, whatever, because I'm like, these niggas ain't going to bail me out. They taking too long. So we sleep. I'm like, hey, bro, you got to get on the... Not like that, but I was like, hey, bro, like, you get the top bunk. Like, he's like, oh, no, I'm not tripping, bro. Like, ain't nothing like it. You know, he was cool. So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm thinking, you know, sometimes niggas be trying to be tough and stuff. So I'm asleep, bro. Bro just start humming and like, I'm like, oh, bro. Mike, he got no idea who I am. It ain't like, because I ain't like super popping like that. So he just like, he would have done this no matter who was in the cell, which make it worse. And then bro just like, his arm like fall under the thing. He just starts snapping. Like, while he's singing, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. He would not stop, bro. And then, bro, leaned. I was so mad. He just leaned over the bunk. He was like, that's hard, right? I was like, yeah, bro, that's good. That's good.
You remember what it was?
Yeah, I'll tell you later. It was crazy. it was crazy. Aww. And I'm just like, bro, like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I had a show. I had Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
So I was like, I got all this stuff on my mind. I'm trying to build. I got Lollapalooza. I had a meeting that I missed. I'm going to look crazy that I missed. I don't even think it came to fruition because of that. But that's kind of when I was still doing a lot at the same time. And the people that you, like, I don't know how he had explained them or whatever. I know he didn't tell them what really happened.
You
but
tell
like,
him the truth, Corey?
Corey know what he's doing.
Yeah.
But just like, oh, man, what happened? Like, yeah, bro, like, shit, my bad, I missed a meeting. Like, I had an engagement. Oh, man, what happened? Telling the homies I was supposed to be at the studio. I was like, yeah, bro, I got locked up. And then this dude kept singing to me about the casino. He was like, what? I'm like, yeah. He was like, you lying. That's what my engineer was like, you lying. He's like, bro, just tell me what happened. I'm like, I promise you, my sister was at work at Subway. Had to go pick up with my mom had to go get my car. It's like, I'm not supposed to be still living like this at that moment. But it was a very important turning point in my life, and it's kind of a life lesson. So I try to kind of recreate some of these life lessons that were honestly like a little traumatic,
mm-hmm.
and be able to kind of poke fun at yourself based on the decisions you make, so to say.
So your mom is played by Vanessa Bell Calloway. How was it working with her? I love her.
She's great, man. She's when you usually work with somebody of that magnitude, you don't expect any extras. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But she auditioned for the role because she wanted to, which was crazy. Like, I seen that. I was like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
So her auditioning for the role was, like, just unheard of for a show of my caliber. Somebody with my reputation as far as never doing this before. So I was extremely grateful of that. I was grateful that she worked with us on every facet. As far as, you know, hair and makeup, all those things is very, very intricate.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of led us in a way that she wanted to be able to do how she wanted to be able to do it. The research that she applied, sitting with me, asking questions about, you know, my mother's disposition and her thought process and how I would want it played, what's important to me. I don't want to do this because I don't know if this is true or if this is true as far as, like, to the character itself. And just over and over and over again, just giving me insight on how this thing worked, because she's been doing it for an extremely long time. So yeah. I was extremely grateful for her, for the opportunity to have her in my show. And just even to this day, like, she always hit me up. She always give me advice. She always make sure I know what's going on. And I really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's like a mother figure for real.
Yeah, for real. And especially, like, she don't got to do none of that. She can go to work and go home. And she made sure to kind of make sure I knew what I was doing, especially being the first time. I had never acted, never written, never produced, never done nothing before. So just having her kind of teach me how you should be treated and what you should demand. Like, her and Kenya were extremely important in kind of giving that information. And Kenya is different because it's his job, excuse me. It's not her job to do that at all. So I really, really appreciate it. And just seeing how good she is. Like, of course, you know she good. But on set, like her being able to like change, I guess, her direction, and also kind of helping direct our camera department, helping her because we had a really, really, really small team.
Gotcha.
So kind of her filling in the void when she didn't have to, like, I really appreciate it.
How close is she to your mom in real life?
My mom a little bit more turned up than it was on camera. Yeah, but mom, she cool though. My mom cool, but my mom is, my mom interesting, man.
Does your mom really like jail?
No, but my mom has said that before. Yeah, my mom, ain't nothing wrong with it. That's what my mama said. But mama's one of the people, right? Where you have your circumstances. Like, we talk about our triggers in our environment and how it changes us. So my mom's the type of person that no matter what, everybody that came with us, they right until we get to the house, right? Mm-hmm. So my mom has an understanding point of view on everything, but she also holds you accountable for the things that you do. We was kids. She's like, no, I ain't picking y'all up. Second time, like, you get one free one. You get a free one, I'm going to get you. After that, it's on you.
Stay your ass in there.
This happened. My mom done walked in the room before all my homies in the living room, and then somebody tell a joke, everybody start laughing. My mama just say, he gonna tell.
Damn.
And wow. At,
and he told too.
Damn. So
it was a little crazy, not a lie. Yeah, he for sure told, man. But my mom, her experiences kind of mirror ours, and I think it's weird growing up with a mother who understands like kind of the nuance of the situation when you're younger, but as you get older, you go to appreciate it. And I think it's a lot of the times we have a point of view, I guess, of women in these communities, especially when we think about film and just art that takes place in Southern California. Like, it's always the mom crying over the dead body. And no, baby, mm-hmm. don't do this. That's not how any of my homies' mothers are, because you got to think about the Black community. I was born in 1993. So just mm-hmm. kind of the state that California was in at that point in time, the state that the streets was in, the states for our community, drugs, alcoholism, I guess homelessness, lack of jobs, lack of resources.
They couldn't be soft.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think kind of having a mother figure in the show that held the characters responsible was extremely important. Because my mom, she not giving you no passes. But she not going to, you know, shy away from loving you, but you don't get those passes.
What do you think niggas hate more, reading or accountability?
Reading. Mm. Reading, for sure. I for sure think reading.
You think we hold ourselves accountable enough?
Ourselves or each other?
Both. Yourself as an individual and each other as a community.
I mean, if you think about as far as the things we prioritize, those can be better. But I think accountability is important, but we like to point the finger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, trauma, lack of opportunity, lack of people hearing you out. It's like, see, it's not me, it's him, or it's not me, it's y'all. It's mm-hmm. a thing we have. I feel like we just kind of got to get our viewpoints right,
because mm-hmm.
we see a lot of the wrong things in, I guess, the right situation, because we have a lot to look forward to. We got a lot to live up to, and we're not holding ourselves accountable based on our own metrics, our own communities, the things that we have. You know, we looking at what everybody else got or where everybody else is, and then we judging ourselves based on that. But I think the reading aspect of it is extremely important, but like, what is there to read if you do in the hood who don't know much, or a lady in the hood that don't know much? They're gonna tell you, oh, you gotta read Art of War, 40 Laws of Power.
You know, those are great reads. I read those in the hood.
Yeah, that's some Foliard books.
Some
I get it.
I'm
into
him,
I'm into the Foliard books, but it's like, all right, I get the mental warfare aspect of it, but who are you fighting? So you're going to read 48 Laws of Power, the Art of War, to go use it on another nigga?
Damn.
Mm. I'm not into that. And especially coming from that, like, I personally think, like, it's more, like, say, if you watch films all day, right? If you read The Method, if you pick up some scene books, if you read anything about how these things are created on writing by Stephen King, like, get into that, because these are your passions, these are your pastimes. Get into something that is, you know, download the vocabulary app, get your word of the day, you know, things of that nature. But I feel like our the spaces we look for information are limited based on who we are and the nuance we have as a people. And I feel like we have a lot of self-esteem issues when it comes to, like, reading. I remember when I was a kid, I used to hate reading. I never got bad grades or nothing, but I stuttered real bad. And I used to, like, kind of talk relatively slow, which led to me talking too fast, trying to not stutter. And also, vision. Who got time for a speech therapist? Who got eye insurance? You know what I mean? So a lot of those things kind of hinder us from even wanting to read in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So then as we get older and we're assessing information. Now, what do we know? Like, what are we looking to look to? I feel like we will hold each other accountable if we can get our priorities right and our understanding of who we are right. And that comes from, I feel, the reading aspect that you talked about. And when you say reading, I'm thinking more broad and sense of like garnering knowledge and trying to learn.
That's why the Nation of Islam was so important, because first book my dad gave me was Autobiography of Malcolm X. And then that led me to read Message to the Black Man. Then I read From Niggas to Gods by Akil. Those books right there instill all of that stuff we're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
It instills accountability. It gives you a sense of responsibility, and it just broadens your mind to something that can better you.
Yeah, and I feel like one infers the other. So if we can just kind of access more information, it'll really help. Because I said, you know, when I came up here at the beginning, I didn't grow up listening to music. I'm gonna be real, bro. Like, I was ignorant to a point that I didn't even understand the concept of like a concert. Mm-hmm. Or like a show. I had never once in my life ever knew when a concert mm-hmm. was, where it was, how they worked. I didn't understand recording studios. I'd never really been in no record stores like that. Like, I didn't really understand what music was. I had to research and to find it out. And that's a very humbling situation that make you feel vulnerable.
Yeah.
So when it comes to film, television, learning about that, when it comes to just life learning in general, it's really hard for us to kind of gain information without feeling like we're out of place. So we can kind of fix that. It can fix a lot of our problems.
We don't want to feel dumb.
Yeah, we don't want to feel dumb, but you got to figure out what feeds you, basically. Like what he said, if you're doing film, you watch film, and it whatever caters to you, what makes you feel good. But if you don't even know where to start with that, I could see how that could be a challenge.
Yeah, and then you think about, like, from your vantage point, stand-up comedians. Every stand-up comedian I speak to, or any just comedian in general that does stand-up, they talk about bombing or, you know, figuring out a set and how hard it is at the beginning and how you have to make mistakes. Within that community, it's embraced. Like, you hear people talk about it. You hear people talk about their woes and help each other out. I feel like within these other communities, we kind of got to apply that same sort of grace to each other, give people the opportunity to fall on their ass and learn a little bit.
And it's okay if you do that. I mean, I never did that, but I know a lot of people
that
have.
Ain't no bomb?
No, what? Hell no. I mean, no.
Never ever?
In the most humble way, I'm going to say that.
Damn.
No. I never have. But it's not to be like, Oh, that makes me so much better than everybody else because I haven't. It's just how I grew up. I grew up in Baltimore City. So, I mean, this interview is not about me, but real quick. Like, I just grew up in Baltimore City and with all male cousins around my brother's friends. I ain't really have a lot of home girls. I grew up hearing them crack on me and crack on my brother and crack on friends. So I was real, you know, just real quick with improv anyway. You know what I mean?
And you had the information based on your experiences.
Yeah. And that's what fed me, being funny and being social and being able to just be tough, have tough skin, you know, so.
And having a social media following. So by the time you got on stage, people kind of already knew you anyway.
Yeah, but this was before social media.
Just for me,
growing up. You know what I mean? I just always been funny. I'd be funny at a funeral. You know what I'm saying? Like, just because that's just what it is. So I definitely, to your point, I understand that. Like, whatever feeds you or whatever. I wasn't big on reading, but I'm still not. Mm-hmm. I hate when you bring people up after, who was that? Like, somebody wrote a book. Oh, okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know who they is. Like I said, act like I read this book, yo. Mm-hmm. It's the hardest thing. Hardest thing. That's why I was like, oh, we got Vince. Good. Can you write no book?
I just got to watch the show.
Yes, it's the show. And I listen to his music.
And I read you used to send scripts and run show ideas by Quinta Brunson.
Oh, yeah, I sent Quinta one of the scripts. She was like, yeah, I ain't gonna lie, I'd be nervous, you know, niggas be sending scripts. But she kind of, because like I said, I'd never done it before.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of get to be around these people. I was lucky enough to be a part of her show, and then we kind of forged a relationship. We had done a show previously, but it was animation, so we didn't really communicate that much. But she'd been a really, really big help. Her talent and her professionalism and just the way that she runs that operation, you know, for that big company, it's understated. Like, she does an amazing job. I don't know if I ran across somebody who does it as good as she does in the manner that she does it. So I was just really grateful that she was able to even look at it and also let you know that, like, you know what you're doing.
Because
especially not having information, not having access to certain things. You know, these people that don't went to college for this stuff, like, I value their opinion. And, it was a good opportunity to be able to share with her.
Yeah. Why is it only 5 episodes?
Oh, man, that's what they're doing right now. These show orders, they're not really going past 8.
Okay.
It's a lot of things are like 6 to 8, pretty much. It's streaming, you know what I mean? Not being able to separate the episodes on a weekly kind of basis has kind of changed a lot of things. People digesting, changed a lot of things. The budgets changed after the strike. But previous to that, the budgets got a little bit weird during COVID. So I feel like, you know, they always going to throw stuff at us as far as just creative people. So working through it.
But that's still, in a way, that's still good, though, because if it's too long, it's like, all right, people will probably tune out. But it's like, now we want more.
Yeah, and it's also, like, being a first-time creative, like, it's a bunch of stuff I wanted to do. I was like, no. Mm. We can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do that. So just working through that system, you learn the system the first time. And I'm happy I was able to learn it in, I guess, a short setting, because I didn't have to try to figure out how to do 10 or 12 episodes while having to kind of, not fight, but just struggle through the pitfall.
Cut certain things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you got to, every episode, you got to cut stuff.
Damn.
Especially shooting on location, you cutting pages, you cutting time, you miss some shots. Sun will come up late, it start raining, clouds. Like, it's little stuff that you don't even think is going to affect your day, and they really do.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you some questions. They random. Well, they're going to be random to the people who haven't seen the show yet, but they're not going to be random to you.
I got you.
What did the music do to Michael Jackson?
Man, look at it. Everything, bro. Took his childhood. Shit. That case.
Yeah.
Man, it's music. Music can be tumultuous, bro. Like, and I think that a lot of the time we're so busy focusing on the music and what it gives to us, we don't ever look at the bro. Like, when I was a kid and I seen Michael Jackson, I didn't know other Michael Jackson. I'm only 30. Mm-hmm. So my whole life, I was like, this nigga look crazy. My whole life. It's like, I never looked at Michael Jackson and was like, oh, man, that's a cool, fly nigga.
You ain't never seen nigga Michael. You ain't
nah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you get older and then you see, I remember my first time seeing it was like the movie, the made-for-TV movie they had where he had the rat and shit. And he was a little
Ben,
kid.
Right? No, not Ben.
American Jackson, no, American Family.
Oh, the one Jason Weaver played.
Wait, I was going to say Flex Washington?
No, that was
not. Nah, that one was crazy, too. I said that one was crazy, too. Nah, yeah, Jason Weaver.
Oh, yeah,
Weaver.
Jason Weaver, yeah.
I was like, this ain't cool, nigga. Like,
yeah.
Like, this what happened to this what happened to bro? Y'all just going to, like, y'all let this happen? Like, everybody, like, oh, that's Mike. I'm like, nah, this nigga, like, terrible.
You know, the interesting thing about Mike, you know how they say that whole, you know, Bill Cosby was trying to buy NBC thing?
Mm-hmm.
Mike really owned half of the music industry's publishing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No black man's supposed to have that kind of power in the music industry. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever says it was a conspiracy to bring Michael Jackson down.
Look, man, that's all I'm saying. I'm saying the nigga looked like he was into some freaky shit, man. We talked about Michael Jackson.
No, man, Mike was innocent, man.
I'm not saying he wasn't. I'm not saying he was. I'm saying that if he had anything going on, I wouldn't be surprised. All I'm saying is the nigga life looked a little rough.
He got investigated by the FBI for 17 years.
I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about that wig, bro.
Oh.
You talking about these kids. I'm saying regardless, see how we trying to sidetrack it with the accomplishments instead of being like, they fucked this nigga life up. What I'm saying is no matter what happened, look at that nigga.
Was it the music or the money and the fame?
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey everyone, I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with The 7 every weekday. So follow The 7 right now.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
He was the most famous man on earth, probably the most famous person ever.
Yeah.
That walked the face of the earth.
For sure. And look at the nigga.
Damn.
No, it's not true. No.
Look,
that's what he said.
And childhood trauma,
said, no,
man.
No, it's not true.
Man, that true. Weave with that nose. They fucked Mike up, man. They need to say, we need a sorry Mike day. We
Damn.
Need to put
yeah,
it on the American
no,
calendar.
We
like, my bad,
that.
Michael. That shit fucked up, bro.
My bad, Michael. Yeah, my I like bad. That. My bad, MJ. We're going to do that on his birthday, man. Now, you started doing this show on YouTube, right? About 5 years ago?
Man, so originally, when I first started doing music, I ain't never been like the biggest artist. So when I started doing music, people would kind of gravitate towards certain things. We like your music videos. We like this. We like that. And I never been like ignorant of the world around me. You know what I mean? I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm not good at. Mm-hmm. So I always thought, okay, what's the limits that we can push? Probably a visual medium. Same thing with interviews and stuff of that nature. So we had a bunch of meetings. It had to be like 7, 8, 9 years ago. And I'm going, everybody, we want to do a show. And it was, nah, oh, maybe later. We working on this. You got some music for that? It wasn't panning out, so I just kind of did more work. I did a bunch of voiceover stuff. I did some smaller roles on other films. Dope. Being one of the first. And then we did the YouTube thing for a couple episodes, and that's kind of how we got the chops up and kind of learned how to do it. And then I think a year or two after that is when we got the opportunity to kind of go through Netflix. We'll go with Kenya. Mm-hmm. We had Kenya and a couple other people. Kenya, to me, he was the most honest, and he was the most understanding that I was trying to make something, and it wasn't, I need you to make this for me type situation. And so we got the situation with him and Netflix, and COVID hit, so we had to sit that out. And then when COVID happened, they picked it back up, thankfully, and now we're here.
How did it go? How did it feel taking it from YouTube to TV? Like, what changed about that format as opposed to the format you use for television?
Everything.
I bet.
The YouTube stuff was all improv. It was just a setup, and I just did I just improvised, and like I had, you know, good people that have been in a lot of stuff. Kareem Givens, who also was in an episode of this, was also in that series. But it was just simple. We got one set up. We do one thing, of course, playing with the idea of theatrics. So we have anchors on every episode. But within the YouTube series, it's like, okay, how do we create something that feels like Scott Pilgrim vs. the World? How do we recreate something that feels like, you know, old Kung Fu movie type moment, and kind of building around that one moment for a scene versus having an episode of scenes that also has act breaks, it also has transition, it also has some sort of narrative engine that can drive through an episode. So you got to basically blow out the fucking 4 or 5 minute piece, make it a 40 minute piece for that to be cut to 20 minutes. Mm. So it's just really learning the format was the hardest part.
Formula is crazy.
And also having a lot of hands in the pot, like, this ain't going to work, this ain't going to work, you can't do this. Okay, now you can do this because something just came out that makes this okay now. You know what I mean? So just dealing with a lot of the politics and a lot of the red tape is the most difficult part. Mm-hmm. Especially used to doing shit by yourself, because in music, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Right.
And with that, it's like, nah, it's certain things that have to be done.
Mm. You keep saying you wasn't that known as a rapper. Why you keep saying that?
Keep on saying
it. I mean, it's true.
Nah, you like top five rapper from Long Beach, which means something, bro.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. But what I'm saying is, as far as like a day-to-day basis, right, and like the way you can maneuver through this business, if you don't got the bottom line to support any of these endeavors you're trying to do, it don't matter how creative it is. So I do well. I got multi-platinum songs. I got gold songs. I got certain things that certain people never get. But it ain't Drake.
So
the
door.
No, but I'm saying the doors that might open for Drake, the doors that might open for other people aren't necessarily open for me. So I got to work
differently. Drake half white.
No, I get.
And then he's just pulling out his meat, yo. No,
I
gotta do all that.
But
Drake just pulled out his meat. Come on now.
But it's benefits to doing all them things. You pull out the meat.
But you would think he wouldn't have to pull out his meat.
It's clowny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'm saying there's certain things that just wasn't for me. So based on where I was at and what I wanted to create, like, it's certain things. Like, all right, so, like, come on, bro. You know me. You don't know me in real life. Mm-hmm. All right, so everybody know I can lean way more into, like, the tough shit. I can lean way more into, like, the negative shit. Mm-hmm. I personally don't believe in that based on that the ramifications it had on my life and the people around me. But mm-hmm. that would make my music make more sense. So if I make this kind of music and I lean into these elements of the music and it's seen a certain way, the videos look a certain way, the friend group look a certain way, the events you go to look a certain way, now it's okay, we understand it as an artist. And there's certain things I just didn't do or didn't relate to or just didn't work for me as an artist. So that kind of dictated where I'm at. And I'm not saying it to diminish what I've done in music, because I'm extremely grateful for it. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying I'm realistic about what it is. If people are saying, hey, bro, we like your interviews, or you funny, or we like your videos, I'm not going to be like, I'm not making no more videos because y'all not paying attention to the thing I want you to pay attention. Yeah. You got to be aware of what people like from you and take it from there. That's really where my standpoint is. I got songs that have been on the radio, and I've got one or two songs that have done very well on the radio, but I don't release 60 songs. Mm-hmm. But every time I might do an interview, every time I might come up here, people is in the comments having more engagement than they would even as far as how the album go. Mm. So taking that kind of, I guess, information and trying to see how you going to spec this shit out. Because, all right, I'm 30 right now, bro. Mm. Who can do this when they 60? Who can do this when they 40, 45? And I take care of my family and things of that nature. Like, I keep it pretty simple. I don't really got aspirations to be the most, you know. I'm not looking for $1 billion, bro. That's just not how I am. So I enjoy the privilege of creativity and being able to do things that I never thought I would be able to do as a child. Mm-hmm. So I always took the way that people viewed my music and the way that people digested anything I did as a positive, no matter what it is. If people say they don't like something I do, that's still positive because they're emotionally invested enough in it. And that just kind of led me down this path, just being aware of who you are and how the world feel about you.
Are hip-hop artists just limited to music now? Because nowadays, when I see a hip-hop artist, I'm not thinking this person is just going to be a rapper. Only because of everything that we've seen from the Jay-Z's and the Donald Glover's. All of these people that have done so many other different things.
I
mean to put Jay-Z and Donald Glover in the same.
I feel you 100%, and I agree, because I felt that way my whole life. Like, I've been lucky enough to grow up when I grew up, but when I was a kid, Tone Loc was on TV. Ice Cube was already Ice Cube as far as film and television. Queen Latifah. Missy Elliott had a show. Eve had a show. Will Smith was Will Smith. So I think that it's been really, really good groundwork laid just for black people in general, but specifically the hip-hop artists in the past 20 to 30 years. It's limitless, honestly, the things that we can do, especially if we trust each other and utilize each other, use our infrastructure and kind of support each other. We'll be good.
Yeah, and you're doing that now, and you're only 30.
Yeah, I feel old,
but like, not, I mean, from your past experiences.
Tell them what you said, Jeff.
Only seen the show a lot. Yo, what I say?
Tell them what you said when you were watching the show. You're a comedian. Tell them.
What? What, yo?
Tell them what you said.
What I said, tell me what I said. What?
Who you said he looked like?
Oh, Tevin Campbell?
I done got some shit. That's a new one. No, you don't look like Tevin Campbell. No. I said you look like the dad from Sister Sister.
Ray?
But then a little boy, too. Like, you look older, but you look young at the same
boy,
time.
The little boy, what was his name?
I don't know.
I done got the dad. I ain't got the boy before. I fuck with Ray, man. Shout out to Ray.
I don't know who, like, young you look like, but I'm just saying, yo, you look young and old at the same time.
Yeah, I got some old man shit going on. I seen this nigga, Professor Ogilvy, in the in the airport yesterday. Yeah, yeah, he's still getting bread.
Where?
Yeah, he had the whole it could have been some downtown LA shit. He got the whole Louis Vuitton set up. You know, he's in there by himself for like he had a scarf on and a sweater, and it was like 85 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, he did his shit, man. And I seen Mace on the airplane the other day with a scarf and a button up with like two orders of Roscoe's.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so like, nah, man.
I was
man.
Gonna say, did he make you late for the flight?
Nah, I just seen it. I just seen this nigga. I don't even know if Mace know him, but I just seen this nigga. And like, yeah. He was like in the front of the plane. He came on late, and I was like, this nigga Mace, man. He
came
keeping
on
it black.
He's probably
with
talking.
The Roscoe.
Yeah, he talks so slow.
Yeah, I fuck with Mace. He walked in. It's just good to see, you know, entertainers, you know, still thriving, doing good. You know, he sat next to the white man. The white man tried to say some funny shit to him. Like, oh, that smells good. He was like, yeah, it is. You bitch ass nigga. You know what I mean? So I appreciated that, man. So I feel like it's been good. It's been good kind of steps taken.
Yeah.
To kind of make it possible for people like me.
Is it challenging to take your natural humor and wit and put it into a scripted fictional format?
Nah, bro, because I don't even be joking like that, bro. Like, I be chilling, man. You know, niggas, you know.
I can tell, yo. He's so serious. So I'm like, why you going to bring up what I said?
Because like,
yo, even the way this nigga walked in here, like, what's up, bro? I'm like, nah, don't tell him nothing I said.
Nah.
He's real serious, yo.
Nah,
people out here.
Nah, know? I don't be tripping. We're not fucking, the writing is the easy part, bro. Like, I think that's probably the part I gravitated to the most. And I think a thing about making the show, especially when you have some sort of notoriety, is that the perception can be off, right? People was thinking, oh, it's the Vince Staples show. So, like, when you kind of doing the scripts, it's like, I'm not necessarily the main character in any of these episodes. The environment is the main character, but it's the show because, like, it's my perspective on how I view the world and how I feel black people interact with each other. It's not really ever about me in the show at all. And I think that's why the writing is really important, because when you think about the bank episode, right, the bank episode to me is tackling a lot of things. Like, all right, you just seen today JP Morgan, I seen a clip of the JP Morgan dude apologizing for being institutional slavery.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of the episode that we have. You know what I mean? So it's like being able to tackle those things are important, because I'd be in place and I'd be like, y'all just gonna let these white folks like do this shit in our face. Like, and we all love them so much. And not to like shit on the white people. Like, I know I got like one white friend, like probably one and a half type shit. So it's like
one and a half.
Yeah, one and a half.
Damn.
Yeah, well, he like 6'5", 6'8", you know what I mean? I'd probably say 3. I got another 6-foot white boy that he my engineer, so he count, I guess. But shout out Tyler, what's up, bro? But
What about the two with you now? Well, she not white.
Say, I'm not his friend.
Nah, that's my. Nah, she worked for me. She's not white.
I'm looking. I'm sorry.
But now I don't know if she white. But my thing, like, I'm just talking about like, and I'm talking about like day to day life type stuff. Yeah, but it's like, we bro, the writing of it is important because it's so much shit that I think kind of goes unsaid. So I feel like translating it into writing is easier, because if I just start saying some of the shit I be feeling, then I'm going to look crazy. Bro.
No, you won't.
No.
Trust me.
You got some of that in here.
Oh, yes.
Like when the dude walks away from at the family unit, he's like, why are we black?
But, all right, but so that's a true story.
I get it.
I got an uncle named Winford. Shout out Uncle Winford. That nigga cold, man. And he got drunk one day. He was asking that question. My mom was like, shut the fuck up. But I felt, bro, because I'm like, what did that even mean? Like, if we really, like, getting deep.
I don't think you black if you've never asked that question. Not saying that you don't want to be black.
Yeah.
But when you think about all the things black people have had to deal with in this country, why are we black? Bro, why are we going through this? Like, that's what I think he was trying to say.
Bro, I swear, because my family is hella grimy. So we had like a family type thing. And it's like, you know, sometimes black people like get fake churchy.
Yeah.
So my family, everybody in my family had a fake like come to Jesus moment, and it always get way worse when it was done. So this was the end of somebody like savior moment. So my uncle went for drunk. These niggas arguing. He's like, I just got a question. He said, I just don't understand. Just why is we black?
Damn.
And everybody was like, nigga, shut the fuck up. Like, you drunk. But his feelings was really hurt because he's like, you niggas arguing in my house. I don't understand what's going on. And it's like, if you just say that, if I just walked up here and said that, I'm going to look crazy on the internet. So being able to write it and give it context and show the things that happen kind of make it a little bit easier.
But he was drunk. He was thinking. He was probably, your uncle probably been through so much and then seeing so much. And it's like, man, why we got to.
And I be feeling bad for people from that generation. That's my granny's sister husband. My granny's sister just died. My granny and my granny's sister just died. They was getting older and whatnot. So we at the funeral. And I'm like, what's up? I'm going to wait for you good. He's like, yeah, you know, Virgie dead. So, you know. I'm gonna just be at the house. Like, damn. Come on down. It's like, damn, nigga, like, you don't think that sound crazy? He's like, what you mean? I'm like, your whole life has just been sorrow. Like, nigga talk like a sharecropper. He from Arkansas.
Damn.
Nigga live in Compton. Like, it's like, damn. He still see horses every day. He probably don't see no translation. People, yeah. So the stuff that we deal with as people is real interesting, man. And you just got to kind of tread on it lightly just to be, I don't even tread lightly, because when we making stuff us, we understand it, but you want to be, I guess, sensitive to the stuff that we deal with every day and not make it seem like you poking fun at ourselves. Because what we don't want to do is we don't want to kind of go to these people's platforms and poke fun at ourselves and kind of be slapstickish almost. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Entertainment.
Because when my thing, like, oh, man, it's just dry. It's this, it's that. All right, but it worked for Wilfred. It worked for Louie. It worked for Curb. It worked for all these other people. So I can do a show like this. Well, we can't start the show like this. The perspective shift is going to be off. But if we utilize this lens and then we do a slow pan out, then we can still showcase the environment while showing the emotion of the characters. Mm-hmm. And when you start talking like that, then they got to just let you do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Which is why the information is important and the writing is important. Just making sure that you are able to articulate to someone who don't understand. Because they looking at it, it's math. Because with them, they got the world. So they don't got to worry about the stuff that they say or the stuff that they do. Because, and I'm not saying this in a demeaning way, but it's like, all right. Ostensibly, it's the same stuff that we kind of champion Jim Carrey for, we shit on Tyler Perry for.
Yeah.
But it's based on the weight of the circumstances in the community and, you know, how people view these things.
We'd call him a coon if he was black.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like you got to be mindful of the fact that people do feel that way when you create these things.
They have mass representation.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So why are we black, Vince?
Shit, man, because we lucky. You know what I'm saying? That's the way I look at it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I like it. I wouldn't want to be them other things.
No, what? Them other things. Yeah, I like that.
My man Carlos Miller says, being black is dangerous, but it's cool.
Yeah, man. Everybody like dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
Wear your seatbelt, man. You'll be all right. I love it.
That's right.
Well, what's more important to you, properly representing Vince Staples in this show or properly representing Long Beach?
I would say probably representing Long Beach, the community in general, because, like, I'm me. You feel me? Like, you don't really know how the world look at you and view you, but I feel like when I was younger and I was making music, and even just kind of getting into the space. And I used to not want my homies to come to, like, videos. I used to want my homies to not, because I didn't want nobody treating them like they weren't adequate. Like, yeah. I remember I shot a video in the hood, and we was doing, like, it's a mural on the side of a store, on the side of a market that's on 64th. And my homies was driving by, and then, like, a couple people drive by. The homie come, and, oh, I know you're shooting a video. Niggas ain't know I was rapping like that at the time. Mm. Then all of a sudden it was like 50 people across the street just like hanging, because like my homies is cool, and I was just happy that they were treated well. But I was so nervous just for somebody to just say something disrespectful or be demeaning or just treat us like our experiences don't matter, because it's like, we human, we all got interests, we all got things that we love, we all got things that we want to say and share with the world.
Right.
And a lot of the times, if you not someone that they deem is an acceptable version of a Negro, you don't get the opportunity to be showcased. And I got homies that's like the bank robber, like the prison to, like, underwater welder to, you know, union craftsman, pipeline is real.
Mm-hmm.
And I got homies who done sat down, I'm talking 15, 20 years, that's building factories, and they have pride in that. And they feel like they not greedy, and they feel like they want to help other people. So putting that in appropriate context was important to me, because I can have a homie that can sit down and talk to you about anything, but then be like, yeah, man, I did 15 years for murder, or I did 15 for robbing a bank.
Mm-hmm.
Then everything that y'all just talked about go out the window. It's like, you don't understand. We don't get the opportunity to change our lives. We don't get the opportunity to become better people. So I don't like seeing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that we put it in our art or we kind of promote it, because I don't want it to come across like I'm saying that we do it to ourselves. I'm saying the way the world views us is not necessarily fair. So I kind of just wanted to showcase context for that.
All right.
Yeah.
What about Long Beach makes Snoop the most marketable family-friendly rapper ever? He a whole crip doing Corona commercials.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably say diversity.
Mm.
It's an extremely diverse place. You know, the population of Long Beach is actually surprising to me, even when we started. One of my homies is actually the mayor now. Shout out Rex. And he's doing a lot of good things for the city, trying to kind of uplift the north side that hasn't really got that much attention. But he kind of gave us some numbers. He's like, you know, you think this. He's like, we was talking about the area and he's trying to develop. But I was like, yeah, like, it's cool right there. But just make sure y'all, you know, they don't displace nobody. He's like, it's impossible. I was like, now you sound like one of them. Yeah. And he was like, well, 80% of the people that live in on the north have two parent households. 70% make over double the whatever salary was. Like, it was like $100,000. Most people own their homes. Most people have this. Most people have that. Even though black people are only like 20,000, 30,000 out of damn near a couple hundred thousand. Mm-hmm. He's like, we doing pretty relatively well in the city. So I think growing up in a place like that, growing up in a place where you can see the highs and lows of everyone, whether it's white people, black people, Southeast Asian people, Hispanic people, it makes you kind of well-rounded because we all live on top of each other, bro. And also with Snoop music, like, from my vantage point, because I know how it is, his music was, it was burnt out a little bit, but the hits, the things that the world knows Snoop for, it's fun-loving. Like, Gin and Juice, you know, Dre Day, it's not like, just like, I'm going to ride around. And of course, music wasn't like that at that time.
Dre Day was not fun-loving. Great record.
You don't think, like, listen to that chord progression.
Dre Day?
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
Man, dun, dun, the content dun, dun, dun. Of Dre Day.
It's really not
been
that.
Been getting raped.
Oh, what?
Yes, man.
Who got raped in Dre Day?
I mean, yeah. If you go back and listen to the song, they were sexually assaulting the men as vengeance.
Oh,
yes.
Man. Well, I'm not talking about Dre Day. I'm not talking about Dre. My bad. I'm talking about Gin and Juice. Snoop Doggy Dog.
Nothing but the G thing.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, Dre Day was Gap Teeth in your mouth.
Gap Teeth, you messed with my dick, got a fit.
Yeah, that, okay, yeah, that was different. Yeah, no, I'm tripping.
In the video, people getting bent over.
Yeah, that was a lot. But in his defense, that was Dre's song and them niggas from Compton.
Yeah.
And them niggas is crazy over there. You feel me? My mom and them from over
there. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Your mom, okay.
Yeah, they crazy.
Now I understand why
you get what I'm saying.
It's a lot. But nothing but the G thing, they were fun. The videos was dancing and all that.
Yeah, and I think that's why people digested Snoop differently, regardless of his background. Like, nigga, I don't have to perm with the hockey jersey and shit. Like,
yeah.
it just looked and felt different.
Yeah.
Have you ever really tried to get a loan from a bank?
Yeah, mortgages.
And what happened? Mm. Did it end up like that?
Nah, I got lucky, but I got a homie who has no criminal record. He's from New Jersey, no criminal record, no nothing. Trying to open up a loan, to open up a second location of already successful business, and they like, I don't know, you don't have this, you don't have that, you don't have that. But I have had meetings, it just wasn't in the bank setting, where they was like, yeah, this not happening for you.
Mm.
And they was like, you need this, you need that, you need that. I mean, some of that was kind of the process of what this show was.
Yeah.
Like, kind of taking those meetings and realizing the way that people view entertainers. And I guess the fickle nature of this business. And how, you know, it's unforgiving, and they're not wrong, but it's a hard thing to swallow as far as being an artist and hearing that in the financial realm, the thing that you probably dreamed of all your life doing ain't even really the thing.
Yeah.
And especially for them. So it's like, that was a hard thing to kind of grasp. I just kind of wanted to show it in the show.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get out of here in a minute, because, you know, when Jess started to get quiet like this, that means she's ready to go.
First of all.
But
why you get off her head, man?
It's like, yo.
Why he doing
I don't
like
understand,
this?
Vince. I don't know. I've only been up here 2 weeks. I want to go. I want to leave. All right. I want to put in 2 weeks.
You need a vacation.
I do. Yeah, thank you, man.
Give me on maternity leave soon.
Lord. Oh, my God.
how do you know when you pushing boundaries for the sake of shock value versus pushing boundaries to provoke, like, honest thought and discussion?
For me personal, bro, mm-hmm. like I'm never really trying to do too much, but I'm kind of always doing too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I would get a call from him or Kenny, they'd be like, nigga, like, what's going on, bro? And I'd be like, nah, like, I was trying to do the OJ shit, and OJ shit way toned down. But I was trying to do some OJ shit because I feel like it's just like a sad story. Like, when you think about how it ended up, of course he wild out or whatever,
OJ allegedly.
Simpson? Yeah, and like his mind just gone. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, when you look at the nigga talking, something wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
But
he be sounding normal on Cam and May show to me.
But bro, listen to the speed in which he speaks, the way his eyes look, mm-hmm. people's eyes look dilated.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, but you think about his background, and I really look into his background as far as like his father and his upbringing and where he's from. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a sad story. But when you the man and you got that football, everything matters and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, nobody pays attention to
exactly
your background. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
The
so they had to make some calls like you can't, I had some shit in there that was probably a little bit too far. But they was like, man, yeah, you can't do this, you can't do that. So if I get a call from Kenya or him at like 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, they just had a meeting and I was doing too much.
You
those calls would piss me off, though.
Yeah. Because
how do we know I can't do it if the network said I can't do it? No, let's not let us stop us.
Well, no, the thing is, because if they didn't feel him a little bit, they wouldn't call.
Got you.
Okay. That's why I'm saying they calling me the next, because they probably got a call every day. That ain't my problem.
Mm-hmm.
But when they call, they like, hey, this might be a little too much. So, and I think it's all perception.
Fight back on stuff most of the
time.
For you.
I'd say 97, 98% of the time.
That's amazing.
But sometimes I think it's the perception of things. Like, it's never like a you tripping. It's, I get what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to work that way, which is important to me because I want things to translate correctly.
Random question from the show. Would you really want a digital consciousness?
Hell nah.
After you die?
Bro, I don't even want no smartphone, bro.
Mm.
I get it.
I'm cold, man. Mm-hmm. And hey, they whooped us with the cars because now, you know what I mean, you got all the connectivity type situations. Mm-hmm. But I'm over it, bro. Every time somebody FaceTime me, I get hot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to look at you. Don't just throw your face, like, in my life. Yeah. It irritates me. I'm cool.
So you don't really be on social media that much?
Hell nah.
Yeah.
You got a flip phone.
I used to.
Yeah.
When I first got a deal, I look crazy in the meetings, though. I look crazy in the meetings. Well, nobody going to give me no deal. I had to step it up, go to the Apple store. But, yeah, I was slumming it for a minute.
They really thought he was older than. You pulling out the flip phone?
That mustache.
Yeah.
You already know he had that.
And I had no cut. And, like, my shit a little lopsided. So, like, I was in there with the afro. With the cut, like, what's up? How y'all doing?
It was
like,
a crooked afro?
Yeah, it was
with
crooked.
A flip phone?
Yeah,
wildin'. And a mustache?
Wildin'. Bad. He had to tell me, like, hey, he had to call me, like, hey, nigga, stop wearing basketball shorts and hoodies and shit to these meetings. I'm like,
come on, man.
Oh, my God.
I was at the house, like, it was grimy.
Have you really never fell in love with hip-hop?
What I meant by that was, like, what's that moment? Like, mm-hmm. When do you fall in love with your mama? You feel me? When you fall in love with your father, like I wasn't trying to be fucked up, but when people not black, they got different experiences. Nigga, when do you discover hip hop? Mm-hmm. If you were born in 1993 in the ghetto, when do you walk into a place and they're like, hey, nigga, this is hip hop. That shit don't fucking, like, what the fuck do we be talking about?
Right,
my nigga, like,
right.
That's the, ask me when I fell in love with like charcuterie or like some stupid white people shit. Like,
yeah.
Hip hop is a part of, I'm black. It's just there. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, that's crazy to think about, bro.
That's
it's like asking niggas when they met Jesus. Like, nigga, mm-hmm. What? I'm black. Should we just do it?
This is my last question, Jess. You got anything?
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
Okay. This is my last question. Me and Glasses Malone was having a conversation, right? And Glasses was saying how if you're not from, like hip-hop, in order to be hip-hop, has to be from the hood and have a street aesthetic and be on... I always say you wanted to be on some gangster shit. He says, no, that's not what he's saying. To me, you hip-hop, Kendrick is hip-hop, Cole is hip-hop. Y'all don't have to do no criminal shit to be considered hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you have to do... Because you said that earlier. You talk about I could show my my environment, right? And probably
I think,
create better music.
Listen, Glasses be saying half of what he's trying to say. That's my dog, so I know he'd be bullshitting.
Mm-hmm.
And as do you.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like... The important sentence is for it to be accepted fully, because the way that we view certain things, that's a very big part of hip hop. That's a very big part of black culture, very big part of being a black male, to be honest. That's a big part of manhood in general, especially for black men. So if you're making hip hop and you're saying you come from all these things, but it feels different, it feels like it's not how they view us. Because let's be real, bro. We 13-14% of this fucking population. We got to sell things to people that's not us.
Mm-hmm.
So for it to translate. Oh, I know what that is. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Sports got jerseys, bro. It just is what it is. Like, so I feel like for it to fully translate and kind of reach certain heights based on how people perceive it, most of the time it does have to be that. But that don't make it right.
Damn. So you think it got to have the street elements and the hood elements?
I think for their understanding and digestion of it. But what is the street element of it and what is the hood element of it? It's struggle. It's poverty. It's lack of resources. It's lack of family. It's lack of all these things. And that's just the black experience based on how the world sees it.
Yeah.
So it's not just violence. Violence is just the biggest part of it as far as how we speak about it. Like think about, I know they exist, but it's way more mother records than it is father records.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just how our community looks. And how kind of we view it, you know what I mean? So I feel like I get older and I'm like, I feel bad, like kind of for my father, like the relationship that we have for him. Cause like, all right, you got incarceration issues, you got substance issues. Like, it ain't like you were just like, yeah, I ain't coming home, I ain't fucking with these kids. But based on the perception of how we were taught to view ourselves and view the world around us, everybody said we ain't got no daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Instead of understanding the circumstances, you know what I mean? So I feel like it's kind of that with hip hop, is just understanding the circumstances a little bit better. But whenever they had these conversations about hip hop, especially in California, I feel like we overlook a lot of successful things just because they not viewed as gangster shit. Like, we ain't nobody talking about The Far Side or Souls of Mischief or all these other hybrid successful things. Don't nobody even bring up fucking MC Hammer. You know, ain't nobody bringing up Too Short like that. And they had Street Elements, their music that was from the hood, but it wasn't viewed like that. RBL Posse, like, it's a lot of stuff. So I feel like it just depends on what you look at.
Why We Black, man. Vince Staples Show is out now on Netflix. Thank you for coming, Vince.
I appreciate you.
Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
It's the Breakfast Club.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey everyone, it's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready, and remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.